It's been a long off season. Your outdoor projects have piled up higher than the leaves in your backyard. Now the days are longer and the grass is greener. It's time to take back your property with quality equipment from SunSouth, where you'll save time and money on easy-to-use John Deere equipment, like new John Deere zero-turn mowers and compact utility tractors, all affordably priced and ready to work, including the easy-to-use 1023E with 60-inch drive-over deck, starting at only $149 a month. And if you need to tackle bigger projects, think SunSouth for the all-new gear-driven 3025D from John Deere. It has all the power you need, and right now at SunSouth, the tractor with loader is affordably priced at only $272 a month. And SunSouth even has a great selection of powerful, lightweight steel equipment, including trimmers, blowers, chainsaws, and more. So for affordable equipment to get your outdoor projects done right, think SunSouth. Visit your neighbors at SunSouth today or shop online at sunsouth.com. SunSouth, for those that do.
Offer expires 3/31/20. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Welcome to Bigfoot
and the Bunny.
This is a couple's journey into the mysterious,
the unknown, and the paranormal.
I'm your host, Chris Carr.
And I'm your host, Kristen Johnson.
Together we are Bigfoot and the Bunny.
Welcome to Bigfoot and the Bunny. I'm Chris Carr.
And I'm Kristen Johnson.
We hope everyone is staying safe and healthy out there in this age of coronavirus.
Yeah, we know it, the difficulty of self-isolation. In fact, we posted kind of a funny video this week of us self-isolating.
Yes,
we
did.
In the style of Kermit.
Kermit the Frog has been making the rounds, and I'm sure a lot of you have seen that, where Kermit's out there and he's doing his dance. And I think it says, day three, eighth bottle of wine or
something like
quarantine. We kind of did our own version because we also get a little stir crazy staying in all the time. Mm-hmm. And although we are 3 weeks in and potentially well past our eighth bottle.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not that bad. But there's no question the coronavirus is affecting all of us. You know, China, if they release the global pandemic with intention,
stands to be the first to recover and position itself even better in the global economy.
We have heard that China has started the spread of propaganda stating the United States planted the virus there in their wet markets. And meanwhile, here in the West, some theorize that China released this as a bioweapon in Wuhan, which coincidentally,
very coincidentally,
has the only biological military laboratory capable of creating such a bioweapon.
Either way, the targeted population is by far targeted the most, I apologize, is That's the elderly right. and those with underlying conditions.
Coincidentally.
So coincidentally.
This is the segment of the population that represents the largest drain on both governments' financial and healthcare systems.
So does the idea of population control seem outrageous to you?
This brings us to the Georgia Guidestones. The Georgia Guidestones is a granite monument erected in 1980 in Elbert County, Georgia, in the United States.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to go a little off the thing here because I don't think we wrote that all out properly. So it is. It's Elbert County, Georgia.
Is 10
guidelines and phrases on it. It's a center slab with four surrounding slabs with a capstone and stands 19 feet, 3 inches tall. It was commissioned in 1979 by a pseudonym, an anonymous, Robert C. Christian. and a quote-unquote small group of loyal Americans, and 5 acres were purchased from farm owner Wayne Mullinex to build it.
Right. So, do you want to read the we can read the guidestones? You want to keep going? So, a set of 10 guidelines is inscribed on the structure in 8 modern languages.
That's right. And what are those languages there? English.
Spanish.
Swahili.
Hindi.
Hebrew.
Arabic.
Chinese.
And Russian.
That's right. And on the capstone,
around the edges of the square,
there are 4 other languages written.
They're ancient languages.
Ancient and extinct languages, yes. That's the Babylonian cuneiform.
Classic Greek.
Sanskrit.
Ancient Egyptian.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the important thing, and the thing everybody gravitates to with these guidestones, are the messages upon it. And there seems to be a lot of mystery and paranoia surrounding them.
A lot of conspiracy theories.
A lot of conspiracy theories. Alex Jones has been quoted as saying the guidestones call for the culling of humans, and others say that they're post-apocalyptic instructions.
That's right.
But if you're not familiar, we'll read those instructions or guidelines too.
Yeah, I don't know if they're really guidelines, but I don't know. From this,
some call them commandments.
Right. So the first written one on the guidestones, it says, maintain humanity under 500 million in the perpetual balance with nature.
The second is guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. And that's a very controversial one.
Mm-hmm. Number 3 is unite humanity with a living new language.
And I've wondered if this meant the internet or something like that, because this thing was, you know, erected in 1979, 1980. Mm. I wonder if this has actually happened. To give a little woo to it, you know, we kind of did develop a new language since then. But sure. The next one is rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Mm.
Number 5 is protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts.
Let all nations rule internally, resolving external issues in a world court.
Number 7 is avoid petty laws and useless officials.
Yeah, that's the one everyone likes, right? Like, why can't we at least implement that? The next one is balance personal rights with social duties.
Number 9 is prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite.
Yes, the infinite. That's a little ambiguous, but yeah, sure. And lastly, be not a cancer on earth. Leave room for nature. And that's interesting because it repeats it twice, you know, and it does kind of lend to the idea that there's some kind of hidden code in all of this that maybe isn't obvious. Like, why was it written twice? Is it necessary to write it twice? Does it give it more, you know, oomph that we wrote it twice? Did, you know, was it maybe that important to the author of said instructions or commandments, if you will?
I don't know.
It's the 10 commandments, you know, by someone else. And it is curious that it is 10, and they are somewhat commandment-like, you know. Are we kind of got into this, you know, because of obviously coronavirus and the effect COVID-19 is having. And, you know, it certainly lends to the idea of population control. Mm-hmm. And as we got into it a little more, we realized, you know, how much eugenics plays a role in there in line to guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. As well as the first, you know, of course, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature.
So what we found out was R.C. Christensen is the pseudonym. Yeah, Sunanim for. That's who erected the stones, who wrote everything on them. And we come to find out as we were researching, his name is Robert Carter Cook.
That's what most people think. And we got to put that out there, too. We kind of agree, you know, based on the research that we did, that it is this Robert Carter Cook. But, you know, nobody knows for sure. And I find that kind of curious, Chris, you know, because if you look into this, and I came across this today, even you and I didn't have a chance to talk about it. Mm-hmm. He bought the land from the farm owner.
Yes.
Mullenix. And we were wondering, remember, we were wondering what the connection was with the farm owner. Well, he bought the land outright, 5 acres, and then he transferred the ownership back to Elbert County,
right,
of the 5 acres. So there has to be public record of the guy's name, and it would have to be, I think, a legal name. I don't know if he could, you know, put R.C. Christian on there if it's a legal document, and it should be some kind of public record. But in all the research we did, and this weekend we did, you know, delve into this pretty deeply, I wasn't able to find it.
Right.
You know, nobody has come up with that or been able to produce anything, and it's still somewhat of a mystery. But most signs, you know, do point to Robert Carter. So
Robert Cook.
Robert Carter Cook. Sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, sweetie.
No, that's all right. That's it is so it points to.
So as we were delving,
sorry, I got all kinds of crazy notes.
Yeah,
here,
But as we were delving into this, we found out that he was a geneticist and a you want to say that word? eugenicist.
Eugenist. I think it's eugenist. He was a eugenist. He was a known eugenist. He was somewhat famous for his book, which I don't have in front of me, and it was Fertility. What is it? Fertility.
I have it right here. One of his books are called Human Fertility, The Modern Dilemma.
Modern Dilemma, right, right. And we found that that book was printed in German, right?
Yes.
Apparently a pretty successful book. It was in German and English when we looked it up. And
most of his other, well,
it's interesting because we tend to think of Germany as the eugenists. And I said, well, are we saying that Mr. Cook was a Nazi? No, not at all. Not at all. So after doing some digging, what we found out is this idea of eugenics is actually a very American idea and was very, very accepted in science and by large business and by higher education. Earlier in this country, before World War II, during World War II, and after World War II.
Right.
And this is all a bit of ugly history, but true history. And once again, we like to reveal the true history of things.
Right.
Not unlike we did with Native Americans. And Native American broadcast is Native American Hauntings is the last broadcast we did on our Dark Horse Paranormal podcast, which is our not live show, the one we produce and distribute. You can find everywhere you get podcasts, along with the archives of this show, which you can find in the United Public Radio archives and also out there. Little plug. We got to do that. And you can find all this information at where, Chris?
www.darkhorseparanormal.com.
And Paranormal Podcast.com.
Oh, we got a podcast.
Oh, no, you know what? It's not Paranormal. You know, I'm so wrong. I'm so confused tonight. I'm so sorry, guys. I am just like all over the place because I was scrambling to get ready for the show. It is www.darkhorseparanormal.com and
www.bigfootandthebunny.com.
That's right. That one's even easier. But they both kind of get you to the same place. And
yeah.
Yeah. We're still working on a website, but it's mostly complete. There's some cool stuff up there. Let's get back to the eugenics.
He's quite
eugenics.
The...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say he has a lot of books out, well, a few of them on this topic itself. And one of them is called People, and it has an exclamation mark. And it says, An Introduction to the Study of Population. The next book he Deeb wrote, was the population crisis and the use of world resources. So that's why, while we were looking this up and his name, we really do think this is really him that erected the stones, the guide stones, because right. of everything that goes with the, we'll say, commandments or, but yeah.
Yeah. And he was also, per the Library of Congress at, you know, loc.gov, if you look him up there, you'll see that he was a disciplinarian with the Tucson Indian Training School in Escuela, Arizona.
Right.
You know, prior to doing this. And that's very interesting. It goes back again to the Native American hauntings, because one of the things we talked about were these, what they called the Indian schools, mm-hmm. that I think lasted up into at least the 1960s or 70s. And they're considered very haunted places now because they were riddled with things like sexual and physical abuse. These schools existed when they started out. They would literally take the babies of Native American tribes and raise them, the children, away from their parents from all different tribes. That particular school, I think, had something like seven different tribes, mm-hmm. children from seven different tribes in it. And they would cut their hair, which was a big to-do in their culture. You know, their pride and strength was supposed to be shown in their hair length, actually.
Right.
You know, and they would cut their hair, make them lose all their culture, wear military school type clothing. They wouldn't see their parents again, basically. And they treated them very harshly, you know, kind of in almost a prisoner-like fashion to try to introduce them to American culture, which, you know, that might seem a bit, you know, like a hypocrisy, but that, you know, they were trying to break them of all their hunter-gatherer cultural trappings.
Right.
You know, and that's how they did it. And, you know, he was the disciplinarian. That was his title at said
that's
school.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, you can imagine what that involved, you know. Not necessarily, you know, the nicest guy. You know,
no, not at all.
Concept of eugenics and goes into things like sterilization and euthanasia, as we'll discuss. And you know, it's a pretty dark topic, and it's one that a lot of people can, you know, relate to in the ways of, like, you can paint the face on it like this. Well, all right, if you have sexual predators out there, should they be sterilized? Well, it's pretty simple to say, yeah, you know, I mean, I feel that way too. You know, it's like, yeah, cut it off. You know what I mean? I don't want to have that, or child molester or something like that. But where does it stop? Right.
Right.
So this concept, you know, it gets pretty deep, and it gets into the genetics of people and the idea of improving society through genetics. The American eugenics movement received funding from corporate foundations, including the Carnegie Institution. Carnegie, you know, mm-hmm. multimillionaire, yeah. Rockefeller Foundation, Harriman Railroad fortune. In 1906, J.H. Kellogg provided funding to help found the Race Betterment Foundation, Battle Creek, Michigan. The Eugenics Record Office, ERO, was founded in Cold Spring Harbor, New York, in 1911 by the renowned biologist Charles B. Davenport, using money from both the Harriman Railroad fortune and the Carnegie Institution. As late as the 1920s, the ERO is one of the leading organizations in the American eugenics movement.
Right. I'm not on that page.
It's the one I sent you.
Both are like, ooh.
It was widely accepted in the U.S. academic community. By 1928, there were 376 separate university courses in some of the United States' most leading schools, enrolling more than 20,000 students, which included eugenics in the curriculum. Did you find a page?
I did not. I'm looking.
That's all right. Sorry. I could just
I was doing some stuff, and I was looking. I was
No worries. We're all just like in a crazy rush tonight. But by 1910, there was a large and dynamic network of scientists, farmers, and professionals engaged in the national eugenics projects and actively promoting eugenic legislation. The American Breeders Association, which sounds like it's something for dogs, right?
It does. It really does.
It's the first eugenic body in the U.S. expanded in 1906 to include a specific eugenics committee under the direction, again, of Charles B. Davenport, and emphasized the value of superior blood and the menace to society of inferior blood. Membership of this included Alexander Graham Bell, Stanford President David Starr Jordan, and Luther Burbank.
Okay. Indiana.
I'm sorry, before you start, I just wanted to say, I mean, we're reading off a couple of notes that we have, but, you know, think about this. Now, this is, you know, from the 1880s leading up until, you know, World War II, and we're supposedly in World War II to save the Jewish community and stop the mass murder and euthanization of them and all the atrocities of that. Mm-hmm. And you really have to wonder. I think we were one of the last folks to even get into World War II. But here's what's going on in America. At this point, it's widely accepted that this is the modern day science. You know, genetics determine exactly what a person's abilities are going to be. This is what the forethought is. You know, this is what's being taught in colleges. Right?
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, a person can't learn something and become better at any particular ability. That's all about the genetics, and this is how we're going to push the human race. This is the common good and the common thought.
Right.
You know, and with that, go ahead.
Indiana became the first state to enact sterilization legislation. I told you I was going to butcher some words tonight. In 1907, followed closely by Washington, California, and Connecticut in 1909. Sterilization rates across the country were relatively low, California being the sole exception, until the 1927 Supreme Court case, Buck versus Bell, which legitimized the forced sterilization of patients at the Virginia Home for the Mentally, and I hate saying that, mentally retarded, but it's ill, mentally ill, we'll say.
But that's what the home was called.
Right. I don't like that.
That was their words.
Right.
The number of sterilizations performed per year increased until another Supreme Court case, Skinner versus Oklahoma, 1942, complicated the legal situation by ruling against sterilization of criminals. If the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution was violated, that is, if sterilization was to be performed, then it could not exempt white-collar criminals. The state of California was the vanguard of the American eugenics movement, performing about 20,000 sterilizations, or one-third of the 60,000 nationwide from 1909 until the 1960s.
That number blew our minds. We could not believe that.
Right. What we found out. Yeah, to the 1960s.
We were the first ones.
Sterilizations, but that's not even totally accurate, because they were performing them up into the 1970s on who? But our Native American community.
Right.
Which brings us back to that stuff. And
terrible.
Yeah, it was just pretty horrible. I might have a little information on that.
While California had the highest number of sterilizations, North Carolina's eugenics program, which operated from 1933 to 1977, was the most aggressive of the 32 states that had eugenics programs. An IQ of 70 or lower meant sterilization.
Yep, was appropriate in North Carolina.
Right.
The North Carolina Eugenics Board almost always approved proposals brought before them by local welfare boards.
Of all states, only North Carolina gave social workers the power to designate people for sterilization. Here, at last, was a method of preventing unwanted pregnancies by an acceptable, practical, and inexpensive method, wrote Alice Curwell in March of 1967, Journal of, the North Carolina Board of Public Welfare. The poor readily adopted the new techniques for birth control. So it's quoted there.
Right, right. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
A 1911 Carnegie Institute, again, Andrew Carnegie, the steel billionaire, you know, with the Industrial Revolution report, explored 18 methods for removing defective genetic attributes. And method number 8 was euthanasia. The most commonly suggested method of euthanasia was to set up a local gas chamber.
Again,
this is before World War II, right?
Right.
However, many in the eugenics movement did not believe that Americans were ready to implement a large-scale euthanasia program, so doctors had to find clever ways of subtly implementing eugenic euthanasia in various medical institutions. For example, a mental institution in Lincoln, Illinois, fed its incoming patients milk infected with tuberculosis, reasoning that it genetically fit individuals would be resistant, resulting into a 30-40% annual death rate. Other doctors practice euthanasia through various forms of lethal neglect. Another place that is found to be haunted is asylums.
And right.
You really have to wonder why, huh?
Greatly haunted, yes. It's terrible. I think so.
Exactly. So that's all pretty brutal. Robert C. Carter doesn't seem like a great guy. And honestly, I think a lot of what we're trying to say with all this is that, you know, the mystery behind the stones and all of that is really not such a mystery. It doesn't really point to anything to do with, like, say, the Rosicrucians.
Or the Federal Reserve. Everybody was talking about that. However, he had people backing him, like the Carnegies and all those folk, which it...
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Because
it's okay.
You're kind of going a little out there. We don't know who was backing him. But we don't know that whether it's the Rosicrucians or Freemasons. I mean, a small group of loyal Americans could have been anybody.
Right.
But it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really represent either of those groups necessarily in practice. And, you know, we've looked at the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians, who are very interesting. Rosicrucians.
Yes, very.
And they did not necessarily acquire mad wealth, as far as we could tell, nor promoted eugenics in any way. So, you know, this idea that the Guidestones belong to a mystery school, it isn't one that, you know, is very conclusive at all. I mean, simply, you know, the man himself seemed that we think it, you know, is behind them, wrote extensively about eugenics and seems to be simply promoting his world view.
Right.
Interesting enough, there is an explanatory tablet next to the stones. It lists various facts about size, weight, and astronomical features. And the phrase, let these be guidestones to an age of reason, quote unquote. The astronomical features feature a hole in the center column in which the North Star, that is Polaris, correct, Chris?
Yes, it's not me.
And I'm busting my own chops on that. Is always seen. There's a slot in the center column that aligns with the rising sun during solstices and equinoxes. Mm-hmm. And there's an aperture in the capstone that allows sunlight through at noon each day, marking each day of the year. Now, that all sounds pretty impressive, and that's where a lot of the kind of woo, again, to gets attributed, but... astronomers say that this is just like kind of first grade stuff to pull off, you know, and I actually read a quote from saying that modern astronomers view that this is really, the Guidestones are an abacus compared to Stonehenge's computer.
Right.
When you get into the actual detail of how hard it is to pull off these little tricks. So, you know, it's not, I mean, if you're not topping Stonehenge and the astronomy aspect or coming close, you know, it's almost like you wonder why it's there.
Right. I can't figure out, like, maybe his, well, whatever it is, his logic, I guess, to put it there. Him and his, we'll say the other guys that were, you know, what's the?
It's a group of loyal Americans is the way.
The loyal Americans, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess we don't know if they were counting on World War III coming, or a lot of people attribute it to that. Maybe there might be a World War III, and that if the population became under 500 million, these stone slabs like Stonehenge would still most likely
still exist, right? Still and exist, that, right. That's the thing. They could be instructions for a post-apocalyptic world.
Right.
You know, maybe that is the intention, you know. At that point, you know, you would have a new world order if you were going to start over again, right?
Right.
But I think humans' instinct is to be more tribal. And it would be hard to get that together. I mean, we're just, you know, in our lifetimes had this idea of a global economy arise, right?
Right.
But is that really even true? I mean, I think we just started calling it that. We can also go back to times, you know, of Christopher Columbus, the great slayer of civilizations, you know, and the trading and things that went on during those times. So in a certain way, I guess the global economy's been with us a long time. I don't know. It's just a thought. I guess that's just what we call it now.
At the unveiling of the monument, a local minister proclaimed that he believed the monument was for sun worshipers, for cult worship, and for devil worship.
Right, right.
Yeah.
A lot of people attribute it to devil worship. And I don't quite understand that angle of it.
So the most widely agreed upon interpretation of the stones is that they describe the basic concepts required to rebuild a devastated civilization. That's basically, like I said, while they were there, maybe a World War III. The engraved suggestion to keep humanity's population below 500 million could have been made under the assumption that war had already reduced humanity below this number.
Wow. Well, you know, the term eugenics started in 1883. It was first said or written by Sir Francis Galton, who was a statistician, a polymath, a sociologist, a psychologist, an anthropologist, mm-hmm. a tropical explorer, a geographer, an inventor, a meteorologist, among other things.
Oh, love this guy.
And he would eventually be knighted. Well, I don't really love him, but he's got a lot of stuff under his belt. I don't like the idea of eugenics. First used the term eugenics to describe scientifically the biological differences in genes and the concept of being quote unquote well born. He believed the differences in people's various abilities were acquired primarily through genetics, and selective breeding should be implemented to improve the human race. So right. I'm not sure you want to sign up for that.
Kidding of anthropology and stuff. Everything got under the
top. That all sounded good, but I wonder how you became a authority on such things back then. I mean, did he have degrees in those things? I'm not really sure. I didn't dig that deep, but all of that is true. In fact, the list went on a little ways. So.
Yep. So, like we were saying, this is basically not a conspiracy. Well, from our point of view, as we were doing our research, It's not really conspiracy theories. It's more of who this man was and what he did, what he believed in. Right?
Right, right. And it seems like he just really heartfelt felt that this was the way
necessary
the human race to pave the way to the future. And if you had the opportunity, maybe do it again. But, you know, it wasn't a crazy thought. And I think that was the point of why we're bringing up all these things like sterilization and euthanasia. We aren't taught in our history books, in our classrooms, you know, that we were, you know, considered this modern science, you know, in the early 1900s, late 1800s. We certainly weren't taught, you know, that we would continue this on into the 1970s. I mean, you and I were born at this time, and they were still sterilizing, I think it was somewhere between 25% and 50% of Native American women on the reservations in the 1970s, from the 60s to the 70s, which had a huge impact on tribal life and, you know, on their psychology, on their habits and addictions. It's a horrible thing.
That's terrible. I find that absolutely awful. But
and they were very deceptive, too. They weren't very kind to the Latin American women either, you know. And often has been said, you know, a Latin American woman would go into the doctors with a daughter, say, oh, your daughter just needs a, you know, a couple of shots, blah, blah, blah. And they would actually be performing, you know, sterilization on her, like a tubal ligation, you know.
Yeah, without anybody's knowledge. They would
without anyone's knowledge. And if they didn't
or anything.
If they didn't know English, they would push papers in front of them and just say, oh, sign this. And it was they were signing off their
birthright.
Daughters.
Right. Yeah. Have children.
Exactly. Because they were considered, you know, less than the best.
Right.
Interesting, right?
Right. So in his obituary, he died at age 92. And
I have to say this. He must have had pretty good genes if he lived to be 92.
Right.
Not to throw any gas on that fire, but, you know, he made it to 92, right?
Right. Right.
We'll give him that, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was saying he's a demographer, geneticist, and author who was among the first to warn of the dangers of overpopulation. And he died of pneumonia on January 7th, 1991. So he was still living when, you and I were born. Mr. Cook was Mr. Cook was an editor of, this was interesting, of the American Genetic Association Journal of Hereditary, which I found a copy of the Journal of Hereditary, and it said Journal of Hereditary, how to breed plants, the breeding of plants and the breeding of animals as well. So he was doing that as well. And being a geneticist from 1922 until 1962. And in that capacity began to publish articles during the 1930s, advocating birth control and warning that disastrous consequences would result from a runaway population growth. He was president of the Population Bureau, a private nonprofit organization that collected and distributed information on population issues from 1959 to 1968. And while seeing there was a frequent witness before Congressional Committee matters related to overpopulation. So he is, like I said, big into this thing, and that's how he
That's right. That's right. But he wasn't alone. You know, America was. And again, you know, as mentioned before, the large financial institutions pushing for this. And this was the cutting edge science of the day. What surprised me the most is like I could see them believing that they'd really come across something here prior to World War II. But to get into it, to have seen that and to continue it on into the 1970s, I found really just, you know, shocking. The forced sterilizations and really the, you know, dehumanizing of these people, the way they were treated in modern times. I mean, we were certainly smart enough to know the difference, right?
Yeah.
But people's belief in that they were somehow less than American, I find amazing. And federal funds were used to make these things happen. you know, the sterilizations of these Native Americans that have gone on about, you know, is federally funded money, like your tax money went to sterilizing them to create this better America. Really? Really? So, you know, in a modern age where we question where our tax dollars go, I mean, it's absolutely worth standing up and asking those questions because, you know, a prevailing thought may not be your thought.
Right. So a lot of people don't know this. And when they look at the commandments or whatever they are, again, now they, if they're listening, now they understand what it means. It's all eugenics.
It's basically eugenics, you know, and there's a certain vagary, you know, and some of the other things that are written on there. And it certainly seems to be, you know, things that everybody likes and then maybe some things that not everybody likes. Right. Which is kind of interesting, too. And it's kind of like the way, you know, packages get pushed through Congress and the Senate. You know, that you have one idea, but the thing is, you know, 8 inches thick of papers to read through and nobody reads them. In fact, Michael Moore pointed out that congressmen don't actually read them after interviewing them. And they supposedly have their aides do it because they can't read these bills. They're too long. There's so much pork in all of them. And that's, you know, not a political statement for one side or the other. It goes both ways for sure. You know, it's not right, but the bill has some heading of, you know, tax relief package or, you know, perhaps stimulus plan, you know, to speak in the age of coronavirus.
Right. And that, like we said in the beginning, that's why we started looking into this, because I was saying to Chris, you know, this is kind of like the trying, you know, to weed out the masses. And it reminded me so much of the Georgia Guidestones in the first line.
Yeah, right. Right. It was your idea to go to that. And it is like the great equalizer. You know, this thing knows no borders. It knows no race. It knows no class.
No age.
You know, from Prince Charles to the homeless folk in Boston. This thing will infect you, you know, and can, whether or not it does you in, or is it, you know, going to kill you or make you very sick, is up for debate. You know, we're still trying to understand how it works. At last check, in fact, today I was just reading there are 8 different strains that are being tracked, but it's thought that there's actually many more already out there, different mutations. Good news in the article, at least the article I read, is that the mutations and the way that it has the ability, well, I thought this was interesting, because it has the ability to be so contagious, it doesn't feel, it being the virus itself, a need to mutate much. Now, I'm not a scientist, and I'm not going to say in way, shape, or form that makes complete sense, but that was what the article stated. An interesting point, like it has enough intelligence to know if it's not contagious enough, it'll mutate and make itself more deadly. I don't know. It sounds a little video gamey to me, but perhaps there's some real science to that. I'm not sure. It was a serious article that I read. So I can't tell you anything other than what I read about it, but that is what it said. There could be many more strains. Apparently the strains on the West Coast are a little bit different than the strains on the East Coast for the most part, you know, as far as how they were transferred and their actual history.
Since it started over there and it came here and populated, you know, us up that side, and then it spread.
I think it was that, you know, it was more direct, like somebody from China had gone to the West Coast, like the person, you know, right. who came directly from China, where like the ones on the East Coast, they thought
human
whatever
human.
Lineage, they thought it went, that person went from China or talked to somebody in China, had some contact in China, went to Europe, and then went to the East Coast. Right. And then there were certain variations from there, because they're tracking 8 different strains, but they think there's a lot lot of other ones. Right. But again, the mutations haven't been as severe. And why that's an important point is the mutations in 1918, you know, Spanish or swine flu. Swine is another name. It's not always called the Spanish flu, by the way, guys. that particular flu mutated, I think, in something like four different waves, and each wave was more deadly than the next. And the mutations were strong. So that's where I would kind of criticize that writing, you know, of the ability to be contagious would keep the strain to slowly evolve. Or, you know, not necessarily become more deadly, because that one certainly was contagious and killed more people than all the modern wars, including World War One. Once it was launched, it was occurring at the time and killed, was a ridiculous war as far as the way people killed each other. It was so brutal. That's a whole nother subject. And every modern war after it. That's how many people that thing killed, you know.
Right. At that time, the population was only 1.6 billion, and we have, what, 7.2 billion?
Something like that, yeah. Quite a bit more.
Yeah, when you think about it, though, it's now that we're overpopulated as we're going with this.
Right, right. Well,
500 million.
I can't do the math real too fast, but I know, like, when these guidestones were put up in 1980, it's thought that the population has grown even so much from 1980, let alone 1918.
Right.
That to get down to that 500 million number, you'd have to kill something like 90% of the population.
Right.
It's, you know,
crazy. So.
Well, you know,
I hope it doesn't go that far, and I just hope it slows down soon, because we don't want it to come back in the waves like that.
Right.
Spanish
socially flu. Isolating. I think people are starting to take it more serious. It was almost like the spring breakers thing.
Oh my God.
You know, I think so many people were appalled that I'm sure even some of them, like, you know, once they sobered up, said, yeah, maybe that was a bad idea. Yeah. Maybe we should have just done something else. Excuse me. Yeah. Yeah. And they should have, you know,
Can't, you know, we're that age. So.
Right. And it's very curious that, you know, they're blaming Fat Tuesday for the explosion in Louisiana, you know, which speaks to the virus being here.
All right.
For February 25th.
Before. You
know, maybe well spread out through Louisiana.
It was here before that, basically, the first person in Washington got it. That's, yeah, I believe so.
So, yeah, you know, it's here. We're all dealing with it. How are you guys socially isolating? What are you doing to pass the time? I hope you're catching up on some podcasts, maybe some good reads.
Mm-hmm. Chris and I, if you saw our, if you go to Instagram, bigfootandthebunny.com. Did you put it up there, Chris?
I didn't put it up there, no, but yeah, you can search us on Instagram, and you can see us on Twitter at Bigfoot and the Bunny and Dark Horse Paranormal, and see how we were getting back.
I told them next week, because we're going by weeks, not by days with the bottles of wine. We're going by weeks. And I told Chris that next week I'm going to be in the fetal position sucking my thumb, and he can take a video of me with that, like that. Because it's just getting to be outrageous. It really is.
I'm pretty sure there's a few people out there who wouldn't mind seeing that, Kirsten.
Oh, stop it.
Really? Some crazy fans out there.
That's just you. You're the crazy fan.
That's me, yeah.
That's you.
Interesting. So, you know, the long and short, again, of these stones is that it's based in this kind of utopian but very eugenically slanted society. And it isn't a big mystery. It isn't paranormal. It isn't real secret society. There's really not a whole lot of indications of that other than the various languages. Although there is one part, and I have not seen the guidestones personally, but I did notice in one of the videos we watched, at the very base of each of the four slabs that kind of jut out from the center slab, there is a little sigil-like marking.
And we can't find that thing anywhere.
I can't even find the pit. It has explored these things. It's the same one all around from what I can tell from the video I've seen. Zooming in, it's a, like a little circle. It almost looks like there's two bananas in there. Like a circle with two bananas. I'm like, well, what does that mean?
We're dying to figure this out. We're going to have to go there to get a picture of it.
That's the 72nd demon of the Goetia. I don't know. Sigil of said demon. I'm not sure. You know, the two banana demon. I'm not sure.
Two banana demon.
There is something there, you know, and I would love, if you guys have any information, it'd be great. You can find us on YouTube streaming right now. And you look up United Public Radio on YouTube, you can find us there. And ask us any questions you like, or if you have any information on it, we'd love to hear from you.
Please do. Please. We're really intrigued with that. That little symbol there.
And other than that, we're kind of liking the Christian stuff. We got, what's his name, Chris?
Who? Oh, Fluffy McGuffin?
New Freddy Biscuits. What's his new name?
Oh gosh, no, I cannot say this word unless I'm drinking. So, Trismegistus.
Hermes Trismegistus Kitty Biscuits is the new name of my cat. Hermes,
and you're having a beer, see, so you can say it.
Kitty Biscuits.
Me, I've been butchering names all night long, so you know, nothing new. But I was saying it really good the other night when we were doing the Kermit, the Trismegistus or something, you know.
Right, right. We were coming across this with the Emerald Tablet and all that, looking into the Rosicrucians who appreciate said things. And if you're not familiar with Hermetics, as it were, the Emerald Tablet and the origins of the phrase as above, so below, you might want to give that a Google.
It's excellent research. It's really
good. It is. It's stuff I was familiar with, but I didn't realize the Rosicrucians were. And they were kind of interesting people. They kind of seemed to tie in all the mystery schools into one.
Right.
You know, we're kind of looking at that stuff. Going, oh, I could be a Rosicrucian.
Right. That's what we're
I'd sign up for that. I like all this stuff already.
Being eclectic that we are, you know. Yeah.
I don't know about this already. This
sign me cool. up.
Sign me up. Give myself another title. And well, we didn't quite go that far.
Yeah.
They did seem pretty interesting, although I saw nothing about eugenics in their literature.
No, not at all.
You know, and Masons, I mean, come on. So it's kind of silly. I don't think it is that big a mystery, these Georgia Guidestones, other than perhaps it's a fanatical response with a little bit of money behind it. A little bit like the guys going into... King Tiger King.
Oh my God, that's so funny!
It reminded me of the lottery winners that were paying like $700 to go and hold, you know, the baby tiger cubs.
Tiny baby cubs. They're so cute. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the Tiger King, but it's playing.
Oh, they are. They are. It's this thing going right now.
And it's number one. Show.
Number one TV show right now going.
So Chris and I were like, you know what, let's take a break from work, which we really shouldn't have, because you know, I was a little lost there, but we're like, let's take a break from work and let's see what this is all about. And what did we get, like 4 hours in? We didn't go to bed till like 7 a.m. We were like so intrigued with this thing. Yeah, this is
We gotta finish it.
It's funny as heck. It really is.
What's the lead character's name? Joe what is it?
Oh, I don't know. You tell us. I'm not sure. I'll look it up.
The show is very good, and there were guys that were lottery winners, and it was like just there's so much unusual stuff as you watch it. You see a guy smoking a cigarette in a room full of gas cans, pouring in the gas, and you know he says something ridiculous about the. Other guys' wives, and you're just like, well, no, the most ridiculous thing is the fact you're smoking a cigarette in the room
with the gas
cans while you're pouring gas.
Sure. You know? I still haven't found his name yet. But yeah, it's a really great show. At first, I had no idea where the heck it was going, but
Joe Exotic. That's what it was.
That's it. Exotic.
Yeah. Joe Exotic. So I think Joe Exotic may be the one guy to bring back the mullet, you know.
Yeah. Rocks that mullet.
In the way that, you know, the Cocteau Twins and Bono did in the 1980s. If anybody's going to do it, it's Joe Exotic.
Yeah, that's it. And what's the other one's name? The woman there, Karen? I don't know, but that she has a messed up story. And I heard tonight that I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but he went and he put a hit out on this other, it's like a rival, not zoo, but sanctuary, pet, you know, tiger sanctuary. It's not pet.
And these people raise tigers, okay? Yeah. That's what it's about. It's about people who raise freaking tigers.
The woman the reason why he's in jail right now is because he tried to, he got a hitman to try to hit her, you
kill
know,
her.
Knock
yes.
her off. So, right. But
right. I don't think you spoiled it. I think most people know that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. So, but anyway, her husband died.
Everybody knows this story too. Basically had to watch this to even understand my Facebook.
Yeah, we didn't know.
Because there were so many things on my Facebook feed about Karen and the dead husband. And I'm like, I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
Well, I heard tonight on.
we got to watch this show, Chris.
Tonight or something. That because of this and because it's so big, everybody's watching it, that they're reopening her husband's, the missing husband's case.
Really?
Yes,
really?
They are. Yep.
Wow, so that's new news.
Yep.
That's interesting.
She
does look. She does look guilty. I mean, she says it, but there's something about the way she rolls her eyes, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there know this. It's just something. She looks like she's lying at her ass.
So her husband's disappeared. Her husband disappeared, basically.
Yeah.
Her late husband.
Her millionaire husband.
Yeah.
Let's be clear.
Yep. Her millionaire husband.
He who was dumped his wife, who was, you know, in the same age bracket, for this girl who was something like 25, 30 years younger than him.
In Costa Rica.
That far. Talking about Karen.
Oh, okay. About
Karen herself was that much younger than him. And
he ended up doing it again with another girl, supposedly in
Costa Rica.
That's where, I'm sorry, Chris.
What was his? It's all right. That's all right. What was his business in Costa Rica? I mean, who wonders? Hey, how do we get to Tiger King from the Georgia Guidestones? You know, I don't know. Florida is that far from Georgia. You know, the Federal Reserve is, you know, Cook's Island, was it?
Jekyll Island. How could
Jekyll
you
Island? That's right, Cook's Island. So.
Yeah, Jekyll Island, because we've looked that up as well. We were looking up all the conspiracy theories to go with the Guidestones, and that's quite interesting as well.
Right.
The Federal Reserve, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was purchased in 1886.
You know, a lot of people don't know that it's not part of the government.
No, I didn't know that. That's why we got into this as well. I was like, wow, it's blown away. I didn't know that. And I've heard in the past, and I didn't know why people were saying it, that the Federal Reserve was empty, but you can't go there. You can't go near it.
You mean a particular bank in New York, to clarify, right?
Yeah, basically empty. I kept hearing that all my life.
Not full of gold, because if we look it up, it's supposedly full of gold wall to wall. Three people have to go in to view the gold to make any kind of addition or subtraction from that. But the Federal Reserve as a whole, which is more than that bank, created on the island, Jekyll Island, off of Georgia there. I forget the date, but is not part of the government. Although the president appoints chair people to it. I think it was 7, and they have their own independent appointees. And it's basically a group of bankers that print our currency.
That's right. Out of thin air. So it was purchased in 1886 by a group of wealthy families as a private retreat. The establishment of the Federal Reserve was established in 1910, a secret gathering at a secluded island off the coast of Georgia in 1910. Laid the foundations of the Federal Reserve system. And some of the names, like you were saying before, was Rockefeller, Carnegie. that went to the
same folks.
Yes.
Bush and eugenics.
Yeah. And that's why I was wondering if they were backing us, you know,
early 1900s. Yeah.
Funding the, maybe, you know, Robert.
It all comes full circle.
Yep. Right. That's interesting, so, too.
Pretty interesting. Definitely food for thought.
You can't investigate it. You can't go there, audit it. Nobody knows who the people are at the Federal Reserve. Just the appointees.
That's right. That's right. It's not public knowledge. You know, it's not public knowledge about when the money's printed and what we're doing and stuff. I know with the stimulus plan, there's a lot of talk about how the Reserve's going to take the $2 trillion and then they're going to double it or quadruple it or something. And there's some law attached to that, and I don't even know how it works. It's all mysterious, you know, how the money becomes, you know, sort of a slush fund or whatever. But not to get too political, but it seems like a lot of my right-wing friends are really looking forward to that check. And I find it very socialist and interesting. Well, you want some government help, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. Not to piss anybody off by saying that, but, you know, we're all in this together. And, you know, thank God for Netflix.
Right. And Amazon.
You know, we're all stuck inside. We get a lot of time. It's also a good time to read, something people don't do enough of anymore. You know, catch up on some podcasts.
Sure.
Check out our Dark Horse Paranormal podcast, you know, and check out some of the other shows here on the UPRN Talk, you know, radio network, because there's some great shows out here. And, yeah, that's what we got for you guys. Check out the Tiger King.
Yeah. if anybody knows about that little stamp that is on the bottom of those stones, the Georgia Guidestones, we'd really like to see it, because we can't get a close-up of it, and we're very interested in that and what it means, where it goes from there.
Right If there is some kind of secret society correlation, but you know, I don't know, and I don't know that it matters, you know. And that is the debunk, and I call it debunking of the Guidestones, because you know, this isn't really all that secret. We've been doing this forever, you know, and some people are certainly passionate about the eugenics, and you know, especially older folk in those time frames, and generations that fall before us. I mean, the things the KKK did, you know, in the early 1900s, and their marches and such, you know, it's so dramatic. And, you know, 20,000 people in New York marching, you know, in hoods and crap like that we can't even imagine today. It seems so foreign, but yet this is, you know, where we came from. And it's a part of history that we don't talk about a lot.
So this reminds me of what Glenn Beck said. Was it Glenn Beck? And the other guy about they want to die for
the economy. Yeah.
The economy. Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about that, you know, it's just like, you know, give it up and die for that economy, because, you know, we're going to lose the American dream if you don't get to work, you know. Hey, come on. This is bullshit. Well, you know, look where the money even comes from. It comes from some non-governmental entity, really.
I never knew that.
You know, it's not gold-backed anymore. So whether there's gold or not in the Federal Reserve in New York, like you were talking about earlier, it doesn't really matter, because our money's not gold-backed anymore. And there was a strive for petrodollars, apparently, at one point. But, you know, now it's based on economic things. But, you know, here's the whole thing. You know, it's a global economy, and everybody's going through the same thing. China, you know, is recovering now.
That's what they say. You know, the wave.
That was the hint, wink, wink at the beginning of the show that we wrote in there, because, you know, it's like, look, you know, they're seeing the first to go down, but they're also the first to come back. So be careful. Right. And number two, above the U.S., by the way, which people don't understand, economy and the world,
you know. So that's why we've heard this too, but that it was military made in a laboratory,
right. Yeah, we did a little research on that, and there's a lot of talk about that, little banter, and it is a biological weapon. And I tend to agree. I kind of think, you know, the way that this thing is just so contagious, that, you know, it may well be, and based on some of the stuff, the research we did earlier, that, you know, some of those, and they are opinions at this point.
Right.
Are that, you know, perhaps it was born in a refrigerator, as
Debbie
Katz did. Yeah. The psychic medium, one that we respect, and I have her book, and we'll have her on the show sometime.
That's just
it's pretty impressive. And yeah, you know, she thinks it was born in a refrigerator, but that's not our only evidence of that. There does seem to be some evidence pointing that way, and maybe this thing was intended as a weapon. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it was released intentionally or accidentally is up for debate, but it is targeting the age group is a drain on both our government and the Chinese government, who has a version of Social Security, guys, and has a health care system like we do as well. And, you know, it seems to be taking those kind of people out. So, you know, it's very sad. And, you know, I don't want to see any of that happen. But this idea of eugenics, survival for the fittest, this Darwinism in motion kind of thing, you know, does kind of only go so far with me. I respect our elders, and hope you do too.
Yeah. So I hope everybody stays safe and healthy. We both do, and we'll catch you next time.
Catch you next week. Maybe we'll do something more paranormal. And
This was part of the unknown.
Right.
Serious.
Right. Well, the Georgia guide sounds interesting. We have some recordings and stuff we've done, and some data we want to present to you guys. But for some reason, I don't know, we're drawn to this Guidestone thing and wanted to get it out. So you guys have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay spooky.
Episode of Bigfoot
and the Bunny.
We'd like to thank Joe Montaldo for his engineering and support.
Thank you, Joe.
Be sure to look for us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.
You can also find us at Dark Horse Paranormal and Purple Raven Paranormal by searching those very same outlets. You can email us at bigfootandthebunny@gmail.com. Thank you.
Catch you later.
Bye.